Hello, Lab Rats listeners, and welcome to my episode about respiratory anatomy and physiology. My first episode covered this, and it's one of the most listened to. And because I made it on a night shift and was yawning the whole time, I decided to remake it, so hopefully this version will be more helpful to you. So we're going to start at the trachea and work our way down into the lungs, talking about structure, function, and histology as we go. So starting at the trachea, commonly called the windpipe, the structure starts inferior of the cricoid cartilage and ends where it branches at the carina in the mediastinum. This structure functions as a passageway for air to move into and out of the lungs, playing an important role in ventilation. The most superficial layer, furthest from the lumen, consists of 15 to 20 cartilage structures partially encircling the trachea and bound together by various connective tissues. These cartilage rings on the trachea leave an opening at the posterior portion. This opening is spanned by the trachealis, smooth muscle, and the trachealis is relaxed by sympathetic stimulation, meaning that during a fight or flight response, the muscle relaxes, and that increases the diameter of the tracheal lumen. And thus, with an increased diameter, increases the volume of air that can be moved through this passageway. Another function of the posterior gap in cartilage is to allow for flexibility and movement. So this is important in swallowing or just when moving around. If there's any trauma to the neck, it's better for it to be flexible. So when a large, but like as far as swallowing goes, it's important because if a large bolus of food passes down the esophagus, the trachea can kind of make room by allowing flexibility in the posterior portion, so as to avoid trauma from swallowing to any of those soft tissues. So back to the structure of the trachea, the ligaments that bind the tracheal cartilage together are the annular ligaments, and they add to the firm and flexible properties of the trachea. So the trachealis connects the two ends of the ring, almost like it were one of those metal bracelets that goes most of the way around. The trachealis connects those two ends, and then the annular ligaments hold them in place, you know, where they sit in the trachea. So the next layer deep to the tracheal cartilage is the submucosa. And this layer mainly contains mucus-producing glands that secrete mucus onto the epithelial surface via ducts. So after the submucosa, the next deepest and final layer of the trachea is the mucosa, a lamina propria of loose connective tissue and the associated epithelium. This mucus membrane consists of pseudostratified, ciliated, columnar epithelium and goblet cells. One more time for clarity, pseudostratified, ciliated, columnar epithelium, and goblet cells. If you don't know what that means, check out the episode about different types of epithelium. The cilia on the apical surface of the cell allow for a function called the mucus escalator. As the cilia pulsate in time with each other to move mucus and debris up the bronchial tree until they can be swallowed or spit out. So the trachea, tubular passage for air, flexible and made of these three layers, cartilaginous rings, submucosa. Thank you for listening to that ad as it helps make this podcast possible. But continuing down from the trachea, the next level descending through the respiratory system, starting at the carina, are the left and right primary bronchi. They are diverging continuations of the trachea and supply each lung with gases for exchange. As part of the primary bronchi are located outside the hilum of the lung, they are occasionally called the extrapulmonary bronchi. Now, back to some pretty heavy histology. Just kidding. It's exactly the same organization as the trachea, including the cartilage rings. So these primary bronchi extend into the lungs, left and right, and branch into secondary bronchi, otherwise known as lobar bronchi. The left lung has two such branches, and the right lung has three. This is because the left lung has two lobes only, so as to accommodate the space the heart and great vessels take up. The right lung, on the other hand, has a larger volume capacity and 3 lobes. For this reason, foreign objects aspirated into the respiratory system and intubations that are advanced too far are more likely to land in the larger right bronchus. The right bronchus also descends at a steeper angle because it, once again, isn't making room for the heart, so it's supplying a larger area. So following the primary bronchus to each lung and the secondary branches to each lobe are segmental branches, which once again have the same organization into 3 layers: cartilage rings, submucosa, and mucosa. These segmental or tertiary branches eventually split into many tiny passages called bronchioles. The histology changes a little bit here. Bronchioles do not have any cartilage around them, and the walls are made of the same respiratory epithelium and a lot of smooth muscle. The smooth muscle is subject to autonomic stimulation, so when sympathetic action occurs, these muscles act to open the bronchioles and facilitate ventilation, whereas parasympathetic stimulation leads to constriction. This is why epinephrine, a medication used to treat anaphylactic shock, helps, because it causes bronchodilation, and right, epinephrine is really important in the sympathetic nervous response. So, bronchioles branch even further into terminal and finally respiratory bronchioles, and the respiratory bronchioles give way to alveolar ducts, which lead into the alveoli. Fun fact, the alveolar ducts are also respiratory tissue. Gas exchange can happen there as well. So now that we've made it this far, let's talk a little bit about the alveoli. They are clusters of inflatable globe-shaped tissue, and upon inhalation, they fill with air and expand. Upon exhalation, they give up gases, but always stay partially inflated under healthy circumstances. The structure of pulmonary tissue functions by maximizing the surface area where gas exchange takes place. There are several types of cell that make up this simple squamous epithelium. Type 1 cells are flat squamous cells with a nucleus near the center. And the nucleus is actually pretty flat consistently with the cell, so it kind of takes up a large space. They're easy to identify on a slide. But the flat nucleus, although it looks kind of inefficient, is that way because it keeps the cell really thin, which allows for good gas exchange and makes use of that good surface area. So, like I say, these cells facilitate gas exchange. It's where gas passes through. Their really delicate structure allows that passage of gas into capillary beds, which closely surround the alveoli. Like, they're covered in capillary beds. So that's type 1 cell. And the next type is type 2, and sometimes they're called pneumocytes, P-N-E-U-M-O, as in lungs. So the next type 2 cell or type 2 pneumocyte are a lot more numerous than type 1, but they cover a much, much smaller fraction of the surface area of the alveoli, probably only like 5%. So these cells, their main job is secreting surfactant, which happens by exocytosis. And this lubricant lowers the surface tension of water within the alveoli, preventing the structure from collapsing and sticking one side onto the other. In the event of damage to the type 1 cells in the alveoli, type 2 cells can divide and proliferate and differentiate into type 1 cells. So that's pretty cool. So the whole alveoli is also surrounded by elastin and collagen fibers, which imbue the alveoli with flexibility and rebound to the original size and shape after each breath. So that's the lungs. I hope you enjoyed listening and find this helpful. I'm Frances Cronin, and you're listening to Lab Rats A&P Podcasts. And happy studying. And if you listen to the next ad, there's a funny story afterwards, so stay tuned for another minute. So, fun fact, since this episode is dedicated to the lungs and pulmonary stuff, this is really funny. I laughed a lot when I heard it. So, apparently, a drug used to treat pulmonary hypertension in women, you know, right, used to lower the blood pressure in the pulmonary circuit, which can develop into disease and make it really difficult to breathe. So new drug comes out to treat it, right? And it works. It's like a cool drug. But a marketable side effect is discovered by one of the husbands of the women who were in this clinical trial. He, like, ate some of her pills. And those pills are called Viagra. Happy studying.